Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk and James Corbett of the Corbett Report, will be here after the first segment of the program today. But first, let's get started with the reports, the market reports, for Thursday, May 26, 2016. Gold tried to move up earlier in the day, traded both ways. We're still looking at 1221 for gold today, down 4. Silver is a little more positive, by a little, 0.02 at 16.41. Platinum, not a lot of action going on in platinum, 996. Palladium was up 10, almost 2% at $546. The USDX today was down a little bit, 0.22 at 95.17, with crude oil down 0.23 at 49.33. Trading volume should be fairly light tomorrow as everyone is heading into the Memorial Day weekend. I think you could see maybe gold go a little bit higher tomorrow if pressure remains on the dollar overnight. Usually when you have the dollar even down a little bit, you have gold up. Gold reversed, but the dollar didn't. So we'll see the follow through tomorrow. And again, it'll be a light trading day. So it's most likely that you might see gold up, but it's a good thing. It's holding its place here at this 1220 level. So I think it's found a bottom. The Dow down 23 points today at 17,828. The NASDAQ was up 6 at 4901 and the S&P basically unchanged at 2090. 10-year yield, 182, that's 1.82%, down 0.5. Euro, 112, trading stronger, 0.32. European markets were slightly changed overnight. Because this is a three-day weekend, we will rebroadcast a program on Monday. We might do the same thing tomorrow. Most likely we'll be here live, but make sure you tune in. We'll probably, for tomorrow's program, if we don't make it for the live show on Friday, replay Greg Hunter's program from earlier in this week. So if you missed it, make sure you tune in tomorrow. There's lots to cover today. A little on the G7 meeting. I have some info on the petrol dollar, so I'm going to be talking fast, so make sure you pay attention. First off, I want to make the announcement. Donald Trump today claims support, he says, from almost everybody in his party. He did reach the 1,237 delegates that are needed to be the Republican nominee. He has actually reached 1,239. There's still 303 delegates at stake in five states. There's primaries on June 7th. So, I mean, he will easily pad his total. So there shouldn't be any type of a contested convention in Cleveland. So so for everyone that is, he did reach his 1,237 delegates that were needed. So an interesting report today, the conflict of interest disclosure reports. These are reports that are filed by top federal officials. They were removed from public view by the Obama administration, and this is in recent months. This is a move that government transparency and accountability advocates condemn as a major setback. The Office of Government Ethics, it's kind of an oxymoron there, government ethics, OGE, reports of the primary tool that watchdog journalists, any political activists, or even if you're an interested voter, can use to guard against presidential appointees using their positions to enrich themselves. I mean, it is kind of funny in a way, but what's interesting is that they did strip this from the website. They had a searchable list of over 1,000 government appointees, including their names, agencies, titles. Now the only thing that's left is a search box, but search box is not working. Thousands of PDFs have been deleted. There's nothing there but dead links. The OGC referred press calls, but no one really answered any queries that were actually placed on Monday. So it's odd. There's no explanation. So much for that transparency thing that Barack Obama had promised. And speaking of Obama, it was just reported today that they found their new digs after leaving the White House. The house, valued around $6 million, according to several real estate websites, the estimated monthly rent of $22,000, which was on Zillow. It's a mansion that is owned by Joe Lockhart, okay? And he's a former press secretary and senior advisor to Bill Clinton. So, you know, I mean, these people have no shame whatsoever. You know, they continued paying. And how can a president, he didn't have much money going into the White House. He had to have a mortgage on his home in Chicago. And there was rumors to that was mob ties in order for him to get the mortgage on his house in Chicago. So, hey, you become president of the United States and you come instantly wealthy to where you could afford $22,000 a month in a mansion from a senior advisor to Bill Clinton. And he's probably not paying any rent at all. It's probably leaving, you know, it's probably one of the payoffs to keep the FBI out of Hillary's hair during the election. And that's my own conspiracy theory. But, you know, it's pretty easy to follow the dots anymore, to connect the dots, because their dots have gotten so large, you'd have to be, you know, an idiot not to be able to follow them. So anyway, yeah, I do have a problem with these presidential, with these presidents that leave the, hey, if they have money going into the office, that's great. But you know what happens when they leave? I don't even think they should have security. Hey, they should buy their own gun and protect themselves. So I don't think we should have to provide security or the benefits or everything that they were supposed to be in office to help this country. And the only thing they do is destroy this country. The move will put the Obamas in one of the Washington's wealthiest zip codes in a secluded precinct backing up to Rock Creek Park that is home to diplomats and a focal point of the Capitol's cocktail party circuit. So there you go, folks. Now we're going to talk about the G7. It's taking place. Prior to this meeting and in recent months, there were discussions where a lot of these countries wanted to work together to you know, support a mutual growth with fiscal stimulus and structural reforms. I've reported on this before on this program. It might have been just last week. This was supposed to be their hot topic during this G7 meeting. These discussions, they've raised expectations that these nations would reach an agreement on a coordinated fiscal stimulus during the summit. Japan's Prime Minister, Mr. Abe, who is hosting the summit, he sort of offered a little bit more of a grimmer picture of the world's economy today. He is actually warning of a risk of an economic crisis and calling for a concerted fiscal stimulus by G7 members, which seems the only resistance has been from Germany. Of course, they have their own issues with Greece, but they settled that out yesterday, so no worries there. We have reached a common understanding that the world economy is facing serious risks. He didn't elaborate, but Japanese officials have cited slowing growth in China, the prospect of higher U.S. interest rates, and the volatility in financial markets as huge risks, you know? So, you know, I think the Prime Minister of Japan is running out of money and ideas. So, you know, I believe there's always money that can be printed for stimulus. And now you have a coordinated effort to bring these G7 countries. And we know stimulus really doesn't work. So all they're doing is buying a little bit more time. Gives them a little more time. They can continue stripping the hardworking men and women of these countries and nations of their savings, because you're the only one that will be damaged by the stimulus. It's not going to help you. They think it's going to help you. They tell you it's going to help you, but it's only going to damage you. So unless you do something on your own, unless you have an understanding and you forget about time and get prepared for what's coming to you, you know, then you can join the rest of the people who don't pay attention. Housing, they are back at it again. Wells Fargo, the nation's largest lender, they say it's opening a box, a new box, with a new low down payment loan. A loan, it claims, is low risk to the bank. Well, of course it is, because they're partnering with Fannie Mae to originate and sell these loans. They are ensuring the borrowers, that they tell us, that they are ensuring that the borrowers have an ability to repay and that they're qualified for home ownership, and that we're simplifying things for the home buyer. Well, isn't that great that they simplify things for the home buyer? You know, well, what about the other people? You know, up until this point, their new product has a minimum down payment of 3% for a fixed rate conventional mortgage of up to $417,000. I don't get this part. I didn't have a down payment. Help can come from gifts and community assistant programs. So this program with 3% down, it's like these people, if they can't even afford 3%, they can get community assistance programs to help them buy their $417,000 home. Customers are not required to complete a home buyer education course. If they do, they can earn an 1/8% interest rate reduction. That wasn't offered to me when I bought my house. I would have sat through some sort of stupid class to get an 1/8% interest rate reduction. Now get this, the minimum FICO score for these loans, which are underwritten according to Fannie Mae standards, is 620. 620. I mean, who can borrow a $417,000 home with a FICO score of 620? I mean, you either have to have a lot of money in the bank, but if you had a lot of money in the bank, you wouldn't have a 620 FICO score. So how can a borrower qualify? Now, that's not to say they're all going to be 620 FICO scores. You know, maybe they'll be higher, but hey, what did we learn before? You think that they're not going to turn down anyone on this program? Wells Fargo is going to service the loans, but Fannie Mae will buy them. And that means the loans must be underwritten to Fannie Mae standards, which are high. Really? Government standards like Fannie Mae are high? Who's kidding who? So Wells Fargo is off the hook for losses, but as usual, the taxpayer will be responsible. It's the same old stuff. And they can't bring it out. People keep accepting it, and here we are today. Here's another interesting tidbit, and I don't think I'm going to get to the Saudis that I wanted to Global issuance of non-financial company debt, corporate debt, will be in excess of $230 billion by end month. That's according to data that was compiled by Bloomberg. Now, that's not the interesting part. It is, but it isn't. Corporate debt is rising. It's still not a record. It's the busiest May on record, but yet over year to year, it's still a little low. The surge in issuance is unlikely to satisfy investors who hope to boost their income by buying company debt. Now, here comes the interesting part. I think it's interesting. It's short. When easy money monetary policies push yields on more than $9 trillion of bonds worldwide below zero. Doesn't that seem like an awful lot of money? $9 trillion getting negative rates? I mean, does that sound like that should be normal? Is that telling you that's normal? I mean, this is just another one of those two by fours that are floating through the air that should get you. It tells you just how fractured the global system is. $9 trillion is getting negative. To me, that's a lot of money for negative rates. I'm just saying. It's another sign, and you should be prepared. I'll get to this. I won't be able to finish it. It's about our currency. We often talk about the petrodollar. We talk about the dollar, how it became the world reserve currency. We talk about the relationship between the U.S. and the Saudis is being diminished. Earlier this week, we talked about Moody's just downgraded Saudi debt. The Senate passed a bill that releases 28 secret pages from the 9/11 report, where these families can now sue the Saudis. You know, it does not sound like a great relationship that's going to continue. Saudi has threatened to dump U.S. assets if it becomes laws. So here we are, and again, there's continued signs of the break from the petrodollar coming from the Saudis. They have a meeting, an OPEC meeting next week. I don't think it'll happen in June, but this is what's interesting. Even the major banks in Saudi Arabia are betting against the kingdom's currency. The Saudi Arabia Monetary Agency wants an explanation from the banks who have structured products to customers. Even after this product was banned 4 months ago, it was banned by the Saudi Arabia Monetary Agency. They're placing bets, wagers, on a currency devaluation. Hedge funds. So they're betting that they're breaking away from the U.S. dollar, from the peg to the dollar. Hedge funds such as Point State Capital and Pershing Square Capital Management had made bets that the country's peg to the dollar will be broken as oil revenue plunges. And these just aren't fly-by-night hedge funds. These are big hedge funds. They made billions of dollars betting against oil 2 years ago. They're wagering that the weaker long-term crude prices and rising costs will cause the country to abandon the peg. Bill Ackman, billionaire founder of Pershing Square, he wrote in his annual letter to investors in January that Saudi Arabia, along with China, was inadvisably spending billions of dollars to protect its currency. That means U.S. dollar going bye-bye. Saudi Arabia Monetary Agency is asking banks to explain the rationale and relevance and explain why they entered into the products without informing the central banks. So their banks are not even, don't even care. They can make money on this. They also want detailed transactions, the details of the of derivative transactions since January 18th. We know Saudi Arabia is undergoing its biggest ever economic shakeup, as they're adjusting to the plunge in crude prices. Yes, we've seen a turnabout. They have slowed payments to contractors. They've actually are issuing IOUs. They started borrowing from local and international banks. They tapped the country's foreign reserves to deal with runaway spending and lower income from the oil slump. Do you really think they care about the U.S. dollar and the U.S. as a relationship is being stressed? So, folks, again, another sign. We can talk about this more later on, but this is telling you that, you know, relationships are breaking. That relationship, the petrodollar, is on its last leg. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We got a special Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold pieces. It's a great, great buy at $725. That includes your shipping costs. Call us 800-375-4188. Alfred and James will be here after this short break, and then we'll see you soon.
Provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Adiskin. This is Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, who I was hoping would be here. And Frank, our producer, has just now said, yes, he's actually here. So it's always kind of Frank leaves this as a mystery for me. It's one of the things I look forward to. Is James really here tonight or is he not here? And I find out at the last possible moment. This causes me a certain amount of anxiety and stress, and I'm probably aging faster than I absolutely need to, and it's all because of Frank, our producer. Hello, James. How are you doing?
You know, I'm debating whether I should just put my mic on mute and just wait till you start pulling your hair out, but I'm here. I'm fine. Good to talk to you again.
How's your sleep schedule?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Last night was fun. We had both children up, not able to sleep last night, but we're settling in.
Yeah, I understand. I saw your video or you were part of a video entitled, Do Elections Change Anything? You were one of four people involved in a debate, and they were contemplating a third, where one or more were saying they needed a third party. They seemed to agree the change does happen, but not in a pretty or predictable manner. And you admitted that gradual political change is possible by means of the political system. But if I understood you correctly, you were not optimistic about seeing that change. You didn't seem to think that the political system was a way to cause meaningful change and reform. Is my understanding correctly?
Yes, more or less. My ultimate position is that it depends on what your ends are. And if you're looking for incremental changes that can make for a slightly more freedom here or there, or you can pull back some of the tyranny here or there, then yes, the political game, I think, can achieve that at some point, sometimes, because although the dice are heavily loaded, it is a war of attrition, so they will retreat from time to time. But my point is that my ultimate end is not for some sort of incremental change to claw back a little bit from the tyranny. My point, what I'm ultimately aiming at, is not to be involved in that game at all, and to ultimately overturn the table. And that's never going to happen from within the political system. And on top of that, it's not just a consequentialist argument. I'm not just arguing about, oh, can we get, you know, X benefit for Y number of people? And then we'll put it into the equation and yes, okay, so let's vote for candidate A, B, or C. It's not an equation like that. For me, it's about the ethical principles involved. And fundamentally, I just don't support the political process. I don't think that it's... I don't think it's moral, and I won't support something that I don't think is moral, which is one of the reasons why I will never, ever, ever get sucked into voting for the lesser of two evils.
Well, it would be, everyone kind of envies you. We would all like to think we don't have to vote for the lesser of two evils, but it seems that it's that is the only choice. If you're going to vote, you're going to vote for the lesser of two evils. You may believe deeply in Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, but in the end, it's unlikely that you're voting for a white knight or a white princess who's going to save us all. We're going to have a problem regardless of what happens. Why do you think we're going to have that problem? Why are those problems built in?
I mean, it's a number of factors, but I mean, it is the system. It is the game itself. If there is an entity which, through its actions, can enforce its will upon the rest of the population, then that entity, by its very nature, is going to be tyrannical. And you can have built-in safeguards, quote-unquote, like the Bill of Rights. But, I mean, A, we've seen how effective those Bill of Rights really are. When the government wants to trample over them, they trample over them with very little impasse. But I think, I mean, beyond that, it's the question of, it becomes the political jockey for who gets to hold the brass ring of power. And you can hold that ring for 4 years or 8 years until we get sick of this team and throw the bums out and get the other team into power. But all one has to, I mean, A, that is fundamentally going to lead to problems. But secondly, all that the smart money has to do is back both horses. Just make sure that you have, you know, a finger in each pie, and then it doesn't matter which pie is running the country. You've got your finger in it.
Your complaint about politics, if I understand correctly, is that politics is a kind of warfare. And it's not just we're voting for someone because he's good. Frequently, we're voting rather than voting for somebody because he's good, we are voting for some against the other guy because we think he is even worse. And there is an antagonistic nature in politics that kind of is conducive to a certain amount of violence and force. It's my side against your side, essentially. Not what's best for everybody, what's best for the special interests. Do you think that the violence and force that's inherent in politics is magnified by the presence of special interests, lobbyists and whatever, trying to persuade Congress, give us some free money, give me some free money, take it away from those guys and give it to me?
Well, ultimately, that's all government is. It is the assumption of a right monopoly right on to initiate violence in a given geographical area. That is what governments are. They claim to have this ability to do that. And based on that claim, who is going to try to gain power in that situation? It's psychopaths, it's control freaks, it's people who want to use that power for their own purposes, for their self-aggrandizement and or self-enrichment. And that's why it's always the scuzziest people getting into politics, because they will sell themselves out to whoever wants to buy that particular political office. And that isn't something that can be changed by voting. That is part of the system itself. And I think it's all based on the illusion, the delusion, that somehow there is this group, there's this entity, there's this organization that calls itself government that has the right to do things that you and I do not have the right to do. Somehow the government has been invested with this ability to go and forcibly extract a portion of your wages every month or every year or whatever, right, when it comes time to collect their pound of flesh. And I don't know about you, but I can't go around door to door and tell people that I have to do this. Sorry, you have to give me your money. Here, cough it up. Don't worry, it's going to good purposes mostly.
Well, you can.
I don't get to do that.
You can if you wear a mask and you come in through the bedroom window.
That's right.
You're a cat burglar.
That's such an important point, that ultimately government is the highway robber, as Lysander Spooner wrote about, but it has that added benefit that people imagine it has actual authority. People imagine that the government has the right to do this. If it was a masked man, you know, with a gun in your face saying, you know, give me your money or you die, at least people understand that is wrong and people will fight back against that in some way, in some manner. But when it's a government and, oh, well, look, they make roads and they give us hospitals and schools and, oh, it's all rainbows and
welfare,
sunshine.
Don't forget welfare and
welfare, unfortunately.
Rich,
and that's
welfare
it, yes.
For the poor.
What was the famous Mencken quote that basically every election is just an advance auction on goods to be provided to the people? I can't remember the way he said it, but the way he said it is quite brilliant. But ultimately, the idea is people are just jockeying to see how much they can give themselves by pulling a given switch on the voting lever.
And, you know, it's not just give themselves. It's how much can they take from the other people?
Yes.
That's the problem with this, is that the government is handing out unearned money, or at least currency, to buy votes. Vote for me and I'll see that you get a free lunch. There's no free lunch. Somebody's going to pay for that lunch. Somebody's got to.
Yeah.
All right? And people are saying, well, not me. Let some other idiot pay for my lunch. And it's part of a problem we have in this country. You know, we could look at a culture, a society, a nation, and to the extent it is culturally homogenous, we would expect to see less violence within that culture, at least I would. Does it follow that multiculturalism is conducive to social, the kind of violence and force we're talking about that you find objectionable in the political system? Because one culture versus the other culture say, take the money from those idiots and give it to us.
Right.
On the other hand, if you have a homogenous society, and you might be able to see this. I mean, we are increasingly multicultural in the United States, but Japan is famously xenophobic. They don't want anybody else other than Japanese over there. And I mean, this is something you should be aware of. Is this a reality in Japan? Are they a little more? Are they
I guess xenophobic is the best word. I don't know if it's quite the right word. That implies some level of hatred or fear, and I'm not sure it's exactly based on that, but it is an incredible group insularity here in Japan, which does lead, of course, to an almost uniform cultural and social homogeneity, and the population is 98% ethnically Japanese, so it's remarkably uniform in that sense, and there is a social order here that is not enjoyed in many other countries around the world. I'm not sure if there is a safer country in those terms, in terms of street violence or whatever, in the world than in Japan. But I'm not sure it's exactly a straightforward calculation. I mean, there are countries that are more multicultural that are still on the safer side. You don't tend to think of street violence and horrible, you know, out of control people in Canada, which is a an officially government officially has a multicultural program that's been in place for decades now to promote multiculturalism. So it's not necessarily that there is a cultural aspect and a sort of the way the public processes that that goes into it. In the United States, it's very much groups are played against each other, and I think that's done for political purposes, and also of course it's it helps corporations to have basically their workers at each other's throats so that they never form an effective opposition. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think it can be used as a weapon, certainly. Basically, this not only the bringing in of people from foreign cultures and who can't speak language and things like that, but also the magnification that that undergoes in the media itself, and the way those issues are spotlighted, and the way that problem is even talked about can affect the way that it ultimately plays out on the streets. So at this moment of time in the United States, I think it is, I mean, since the Civil War itself, I'm not sure that the U.S. has ever been so on the brink of some form of civil war. And I don't know exactly what the battle lines will be, but I think we all see them starting to take shape as violence increases in this 2016 election cycle.
Well, I think part of the reason violence, again, we are maybe running out of free lunches. And as there are less free lunches to pacify certain groups, and both the poor with welfare and the rich with subsidies, there becomes more of a squabble. Give me the free lunch. Forget the other guy. Give me the free lunch. I want. That's conducive to a certain amount of friction and maybe even civil war. And I heard you talk about that, at least briefly. You touched on the concept in the video, the possibility of civil war in this country. Now, how seriously do you think that's? I recognize there's a possibility always. But how probable is a civil war in this country within, say, the next 5 years?
Well, of course, I don't mean it in the sense of the civil war, and I don't think it would be along geographical boundaries like that. But I think the culture war that we've been talking about and highlighting for generations now is coming to some sort of head, and it is becoming much more acute now. And perhaps there is an element to which that's being radicalized by online echo chambers. I think there is that space that has developed now for people to be so insular in the way that they interact with people that they are completely surrounded by like-minded people and can connect with those people regardless of geography. So we are seeing a rise in white nationalism, for example, in the United States. And on the flip side of that, we see this social justice warrior phenomenon taking place in college campuses and Black Lives Matter movement and things like this, which really seem to be radicalizing a lot of people. And it's in a time of radicalization, it's harder and harder to stay in something approaching a middle area. People tend to get radicalized by radicalization. So it's a process that feeds on itself. And I think a lot of it, we'll start to see the form of it in this election cycle. I'm not sure that it will come to a head in this election cycle, but obviously what happens in the next few months is going to determine the shape of either a Clinton presidency or a Trump presidency, whichever it may be.
Well, this is such a strange election. It's hard to know for sure who's going to be president or if we've even heard his name yet. I mean, Bernie isn't completely out of the situation if Hillary is indicted. Then what? And, you know, one of the things, I'll say that I've got one question I'll save for the beginning of the next segment of the program. You were talking about you didn't believe that voting would change much, if I understood you correctly. But if that were true, why did the Republican establishment work so vehemently to prevent Trump from being nominated? The people in real power, they fought tooth and nail to stop Trump. And the Democrats are doing, the Democrat establishment is doing the same thing to stop Bernie Sanders and try to get Hillary in a position to be nominated. Doesn't that indicate that they really believe that voting matters and who you elect really does make a difference?
To an extent, I think, yes, there is the predictability aspect of this. I think the only thing that's predictable about a Trump presidency is that no one would know exactly what he's going to do next and what promise he's making that he'll actually keep and what thing he's just saying to get in the headlines. And I think that aspect of it is not amenable to the ruling class, who would much rather have a reliable puppet to puppet whatever they want. So I think to that extent, yes, I mean, it does make a difference if this person or that person is in power. But I'm looking more at the fundamental aspect of the way the system itself, not just the way it functions, but the system itself. Either way, we now see the Republican establishment in bits and pieces climbing on board with Trump once they realize, okay, he's getting in. So now you get Sheldon Adelson coming in with $100 million, and you see Goldman Sachs financial advisors, and he goes to meet Kissinger and all of this. So it's turning into the exact same thing we would have seen with a Jeb Bush or in a Marco Rubio or anyone like that.
All right, we'll break here for Take Some Commercials. I'm Alfred Adusk here with James Corbett from The Corbett Report. CorbettReport.com, CORBETT, report.com. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
The aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Adusk here on Financial Survival with my guest, James Corbett from The Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. Let's move over to France a little bit. We've got an article from Ms. Shedlock, and the headline is France running out of gasoline, strikes now spread to nuclear plants. France is running out of gasoline thanks to massive strikes at all the refineries. The strike spread to air traffic control and many flights have been canceled. Hundreds of thousands of people are stranded. The strike is now about to spread to nuclear power plants. And he offers what he says is the quote of the day, one cannot just turn off a nuclear plant. It is not like a thermal or hydro plant. What's going on in France? Much ado about nothing, or is this becoming really serious?
Well, I would almost say business as usual. I've been to Paris a few times in my life now, and every single time there were mass demonstrations, protests, and strikes. And each time I thought, I came at the bad time here. And then I realized, this is just sort of the regular summer schedule here in France. Way to maybe extend the summer vacation after 2 months or whatever they usually get off. So strikes in France are not exactly an unusual occurrence. I don't know if I've ever heard of that actually affecting nuclear power plants before. That might be an interesting new development. But again, I'm not really well versed on that particular issue.
Well, it's just interesting, and you wonder, I think you may have the right idea here. It may be just business as usual. It is perhaps just a cultural phenomenon, a little bit like Italy. Italy likes to go out on strike from time to time, or at least they don't seem to be a highly organized society. They're prone to at least emotional outbursts. And France appears to be prone to emotional outbursts, but maybe they do this... And nobody actually gets hurt.
Well, the last time I was in France, I was in the south of France during some of the summer months. And so I thought, I'll avoid all the strikes and craziness that goes on in Paris. And so I was taking a train from France to Italy. And of course, there was strikes. So the train was delayed massively. So there's no avoiding it at this time.
I've got to move the topic again a little bit. I'm wondering, are the rats leaving the sinking ship? Are the thieves falling out? And what I'm talking about is there's a new report out. Well, the Saudis are responding. Our government said we're going to turn that 28 pages of secret information on 9/11 loose. I don't think that's a definite. I don't think that's a certainty yet. The Senate has voted for it, and or the House. One of them has. I'm not sure that the other one has. I don't know that the pages are actually going to be released yet, but they're threatening to do it. And the Saudis are threatening to sell off their U.S. bonds. And here we have from SGT Report, they have what they claim to be a bombshell report. Saudis hit back. The U.S. blew up the World Trade Center to create war on terror. That's the headline. And they're arguing the Saudis are releasing evidence, or at least opinion, or they say this thing was all done by the United States and the CIA and the Jewish and Israel's Mossad. Are the rats are the thieves falling out right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way of putting it. In fact, we covered this very story in the latest edition of New World Next Week, my weekly interview series with James Evan Pilato, MeteorMonarchy.com. We just recorded that, and so it'll go up later today, my time. And in that, basically, I said that this shows that 9/11 continues to be simply a political football. And right now, that football is aimed in the game with the Saudis. And we see some of the back and forth going on. This is just playing out of that. And really, although some people who are on the side of 9/11 truth and trying to expose 9/11 as an inside job might see that type of headline, that's amazing, that's explosive, that's great. But I think ultimately the way this plays out in the propaganda media is going to be, look at those evil, crazy, weirdo Saudis, look at the craziness that they're coming up with now. In the exact same way when Ahmadinejad was talking about 9/11 as an inside job at the UN, it's not like that was some sort of breakthrough, amazing, and suddenly so many people woke up to all of the problems with the official 9/11 story. All it was just roll your eyes, this guy's a crazy, we should probably nuke Iran. So I think that's ultimately what this is going to be. It's just going to be more fuel on the fire. And there's definitely a fire raging at this point. It's just a question of whether it will be controlled. The real point here is that legislation that just got passed that allows the lawsuits also had a little backdoor seeded by Chuck Schumer. That basically allows either the Secretary of State or one other person, I forget who it was, maybe the head of the Department of Justice, to effectively veto any lawsuits before they get to that level. So the back door has already been slotted in that ultimately they're not going to let it go ahead unless they really want it to go ahead. And if they do, that might be a type of more overt warfare between Saudi and U.S.
Do you think this report that the Saudis, from what I understand, this report was published in an English publication. This was published written by someone who's a student of Saudi affairs and whatever. Do you think this is absolutely a real report, or is this some kind of hype that we can expect on the internet? Is this more political, where they are threatening a fantasy
rather than actually coming up and playing hardball and saying we're going to turn this information loose.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, again, let's keep in perspective what this is. This is not the Saudi government coming out and saying this and officially accusing this. This is a Saudi legal expert, quote unquote. I don't even know exactly what that means, but is by the name of Khatib al-Shamari, writing, an op-ed in the Al Hayat, London-based newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So take it for what it's worth. Again, this is just... at the very most, you could say maybe the Saudi government is kind of officially sanctioning this behind the scenes as part of this, you know, stab in the back type of politic game that's going on right now. But it's certainly nothing official. It's nothing that's going to cause any tectonic, you know, amazing diplomatic moves. Obviously I understand why the story is blowing up and why it's getting a lot of attention, but it's really not quite as big as people want to or are framing it as.
This article I've been reading from, it says the decision has been made to throw the Saudis under the bus for the event that has up to this point been blamed on the Muslims. Now, why are we publicly throwing the Saudis under the bus? This is one of the things that makes me wonder about the validity of this report. I mean, this is not a small thing. This is indication that there is some serious tension, not just a little casual tension, not just a couple of people they normally get along and now they're having a problem. No, there's serious problems, if this is all true, between the Saudis and the United States.
Right.
And they're letting this get out of control, and it'll be to both sides' detriment if this story turns out to be true. So why is this happening?
Yeah. No, I would make a slight amendment to that. I don't think this is the U.S. throwing the Saudis under the bus. I think this is the U.S. threatening to throw the Saudis under the bus. And at the point where they allow lawsuits to proceed against the Saudi government or they release the 28 pages, that type of thing might actually be the throwing under the bus. But at this point, it's still, I think, just kind of, you know, a covert warfare, I guess you could call, in some way that's going on, or at least tension that's playing out right now. And obviously, I mean, this is being supported by, you know, 60 Minutes and everyone putting out these pieces about Saudi Arabia and 9/11. I think this has to be seen as the threat, the stick part of the carrot and stick equation that the U.S. is using in its relationship with Saudi Arabia, which, as we've talked about before, is being threatened and tested right now as the Saudi Arabian government has its qualms with the U.S. and the way it has or hasn't acted in Syria. And we have this oil geopolitical warfare that's going on with the Saudi-caused oil crash, price crash, having affected the U.S. oil producers. And we have the Saudis turning to China and Russia as more partners in selling their oil. So there's a lot of different things going on here. And I think this is just the U.S., you know, trying to let the Saudis know, hey, we can bring you crashing down at any time. But I don't think they're actually doing it at this point.
Well, it makes me wonder, what are the chances of what we're listening to is the equivalent of a false flag story?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this really coming from Saudi Arabia, or is this another source who's trying to stir up trouble between the United States and the Saudis?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
there may be a third force in here that's behind this that has not yet been clearly identified.
Right. That's always something we should keep in mind, because, again, even the ostensible government of a country is not necessarily the people running the country. In the case of Saudi Arabia, of course, it is the the House of Saud. So the government and the ruling power are one and the same for the most part. But then even then, there are splits within the House of Saud, and there are people who are more aligned or less aligned with the Al-Qaeda and other groups like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this could be some of that going on in the background, and it's difficult to really piece that out from the outside, other than to say we should take a step back from stories like this and try to analyze it from 17 different directions rather than the straightforward way that it's being presented to us.
Can't just automatically believe what you hear or read or whatever. It requires, you've got to take time to discern on your own and try to figure out what is the truth, and that's an obligation for each of us. Something along these lines, again, whether the rats are leaving the sinking ship, got an article by Jerome Corsi, and it's the headline is Trump's Vince Foster attack backed by new evidence. And the subheadline is, how could a suicide victim be found with two bullet wounds? And Trump is, Trump is saying, I don't know exactly what Trump has said about the Vince Foster suicide, but he's stirred it up and apparently said this may not have been suicide. And people are complaining that this is just a right-wing conspiracy theory, but of course he says there is reason to believe that there was a second wound that some described as one of them was on the right side of his neck, which paramedics described as a small caliber bullet hole. If Vince Foster was shot twice and we don't have a suicide, and this is coming out while Hillary is running for the presidency, is this just more entertainment, or are we looking at something that's going to, again, are the rats leaving the sinking ship?
Yes, well, again, this is another thing that I don't think we're ever going to see prosecuted in a court. I don't think it's ever going to come to that. I'd love for it to come to that stage, but I don't think it will. But it could certainly be a political strategy to try to undermine the Clinton campaign. And to be specific, what Trump actually did was say, I'm not going to talk about Vince Foster. I haven't looked into it deeply, but there are people out there who say that he was murdered. So it was a way of bringing it up without, quote unquote, bringing it up. It's good. This is the exact type of thing, stuff that should be dredged up in any attempt by Clinton to get into the White House. And so it is good to see this and the Bill Clinton rape accusations coming out to light and being at least given some sort of press. I think that is to the good. And on that note, if people are interested in it, I did a episode of my podcast a few years back called Meet the Clintons, where I talked about the Vince Foster case and a lot of their other scandals as well, which I might be time to dust out and maybe feature on my front page again as the election cycle heats up here.
We have about, what have we got left? 2.5 minutes. What's happening with the fires in Canada? Are they a function, are aggravated by the fracking, the oil production of by means of fracking? Are they strictly due to the drought? What's happening?
That is an excellent question, and for once, I don't have an answer. I can't even pretend to begin to answer
that. How long have I been trying to do that? It's been a year
now. I don't know.
It's been a year. I'm going to get my face in the newspaper somewhere.
I haven't looked into this issue enough to be able to say where it comes from, but I can at least direct people to one potential source. There's an excellent YouTube channel out there called Press for Truth. It's hosted by Dan Dix. He's from Canada. And I saw they recently had a video up about the Fort McMurray fire and what caused the Fort McMurray fire. I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know. I'll have to hold off on giving you an answer to that.
All right, we have a little over a minute left. State Department rules Hillary created security risks. This is from Ms. Shedlock again. When's the FBI criminal charges? Headline, is Hillary going to escape being indicted?
Again,
what are the odds?
I don't think anybody can
answer that question.
What are the odds right now?
How do you see this?
I can't envision it happening. I mean, I would give 99-1 against her being indicted. I would give 100-0 against her actually being convicted. So that's my cynicism. I would love to be proven wrong. But it is, again, as I say, like the Vince Foster or something like that, I don't expect it's going to be brought into court. But at any rate, it will be in the court of public opinion, and hopefully increasingly so over the coming months. So I certainly don't think Obama's Justice Department is ultimately going to proceed with criminal proceedings against Hillary Clinton while she's running for the presidency. But the public knows what's up. And look on the comment section of any of these sites, and you see military officers saying, if I had done anything, even approaching this on 1/1000th of the scale, I would have ended up in the brig. I would have been prosecuted for this. But look, the head of the State Department can get away with it. It's ridiculous. And people realize it's ridiculous.
We're going to have to let it go at that. Thank you, James. Always a pleasure talking to you on the program. That's James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Good night.
all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.